Each year, a couple of my close friends sponsor a creative writing contest at one of the local high schools. And this year, they asked me if I would be interested in speaking at the award ceremony. And I said I would. So for a few months, every couple of days, I would wander around in my office, pacing and talking to myself, trying to figure out what it was I was going to say for my speech. And I knew there were a couple of things for sure that I wanted to say. First of all, I knew there were some things I wanted to say to the students, things I wish someone had said to me when I first started writing back in high school. And also, there were some things I knew I wanted to say to their parents, things I wish someone had said to my parents back when I started writing. And I knew that there were a few things I wanted to say that were a little bit weird, if not outright crazy. In talking with the woman who was organizing the event, I asked her if it would be all right if I read some of the entries so I could get a sense for what the kids were writing and understand who these people were that I was talking to. And she said, of course, she would send me everything. And she asked me if I would be interested in being one of the judges. I said, sure, I'd be happy to, because I have so much free time on my hands. So I ended up with a stack of submissions from high schoolers entering a creative writing contest. And all in all, they were good. They were fine. They were quite a lot like the sorts of things I was writing back when I was in high school. There were a few things, though, that stood out. Three writers in particular that really made an impression on me. There was a poem that someone wrote that had an image in it that haunted me. In fact, it haunts me even now. And there was an essay that someone had written that was as good a piece of memoir as anything I've ever read. And there was a short story that someone wrote that was obviously the first chapter in a much longer book. And it was a book I wanted to read. And I could tell that the person writing the story didn't know there was a whole book there. These things were great. And I don't mean that they were great in that these three kids were destined to be the next great American whatever, or they would be embraced by the literati, or they were sure to get published in Paris Review, or anything ridiculous like that. I just meant that they were really good, striking pieces, very well written, good ideas, things that stuck and stayed with you. And I like that sort of thing, and I was looking forward to meeting these three kids. As the date was approaching, it somehow worked out that I didn't really know how much time I had to speak. Either I would forget to ask the question, or talking with the organizer, she would forget to answer it. But I realized I had a lot I wanted to say. Anybody who's been listening to this show for a while knows I don't need a lot of encouragement to just ramble along. And I was worried I might have too much to say, and I didn't want to take up too much of anyone's time, and I didn't want to abuse their patience any more than I had to. So I worked out a speech that was fairly modular. If necessary, it could be 5 minutes long, and I would just cover the important things. And if possible, I could take a little bit longer, include some of the crazy things I wanted to say, and it could be 10 or 15 minutes long. But even that would be cutting it a little bit close. So the night of the event, I arrived and met my friends, the sponsors, and met the woman who'd been organizing things, and she was a very nice lady. And as we were talking, I said, by the way, how much time do I have? And she said, oh, well, it's up to you, really. I guess you could take 15 or 20 minutes if you wanted to. And I said, oh, good, because I have some things I want to say, and That'll give me enough time to say some of the crazy stuff. And she laughed. And about halfway through her laugh, I saw in the back of her eyes the realization that I wasn't actually joking. And I imagine she probably was saying, as her laughter sort of tapered off into a nervous chuckle, "What the hell have I just set loose on these kids and their parents?" Set the stage a little bit. The award ceremony took place at an old church there in town. The building was maybe 75 years old, and the ceremony was in the sanctuary. So there were pews, there was a pulpit, high ceilings, whitewashed walls, everything but stained glass windows. And sitting out in the pews were about 30 or 40 students and their parents and a couple of teachers. And everybody ran the range from blue collar to middle class. A few of the kids had obviously dressed up for the event. They were wearing ties or nice dresses. Most of them, though, were dressed like kids. They were dressed like my kids. They were dressed like I dressed when I was their age. And after the introductions, I got up. I said thank you for letting me come to talk. And then, before anyone could stop me, I went right up to the edge of crazy and stepped off. And I said, "Now shall I tell of things that change, new being out of old. Since you, O gods, created mutable arts and gifts, give me the voice to tell the shifting story of the world." Anyone know what that is or where it comes from? No? It's okay, this isn't a test, I'll just tell you. That's an invocation, a specific kind of prayer to the gods. This one in particular is an old prayer, over 2,000 years old. Those lines were written by a Roman poet named Ovid. They're the opening lines to his masterpiece, Metamorphoses. Like many of his contemporaries, Ovid began his work with an invocation to the gods. In part, he was asking their blessing on his efforts. He was also sending a nod their way, acknowledging the source of his skill and inspiration. In Metamorphoses, Ovid was taking all of the mythologies that had been told for hundreds of years and bringing them together, uniting the stories of the Greeks and the Romans for the very first time. Uniting the gods for the very first time. No wonder he started with a prayer. Ovid was listening to the echoes of all of the stories and myths that had come before, adding his own voice to them, and crafting stories that would echo down the years to us today. Metamorphoses is still being read today. You might have studied it in one of your classes. At the very least, you probably will once you get to college. But you already know these stories. The stories of Ovid have spread far in the past 2,000 years. You can hear echoes of them in the fairy tales you read when you were little. They echo in the books that you have sitting on your nightstand, in the television shows that you watch, the movies that you go to, the comic books that you read, well, the comic books I read. And you can hear the echoes of Ovid even in the video games that you play. I even hear the echoes of Ovid in your stories and poems. For some of you, the echoes are very strong. In others, maybe a little bit faint, but they are there, nonetheless. Just as Ovid eavesdropped on the past and added his own voice to carry these stories forward, so too are each and every one of you. As writers, and you are writers, all of you, you are adding your own voices to strengthen these stories, and others in the future will hear the echoes of your words as well. The poet Muriel Rukeyser said that the universe is made up of stories, not atoms. Which is, I suppose, precisely the sort of thing you might expect a poet to say. It's very poetic, but I also believe that it happens to be true. Think about it. Everything we know about the world and the universe beyond, it's nothing more than a collection of stories. A mathematical formula is nothing more than a story, putting a shape around reality so we can hold it in our mind. History and science, mathematics and physics, these are all stories. Our understanding and experience of the universe, it's all stories. Poetic, perhaps. But if anyone believed Rukeyser was speaking literally, we'd probably say they were crazy. That might be true. They just might be crazy. And, according to some current research in the area of quantum physics, they might also turn out to be right as well. See, according to some researchers working today, there is strong evidence to suggest that the universe itself, everything we know and experience, the whole of existence all around us, is the secondary byproduct of a primal information. The burst of information, the force that brought all of this into existence, is sometimes called the Big Bang. And perhaps apropos of our venue here tonight, you could put it another way. In the beginning was the Word. Now, whatever you believe, and I don't pretend to fully understand the science or the theology of it all, the universe has its roots in some kind of ancient information. That is to say, everything that's here now is an echo, including us. Everything about us is nothing more or less than a story. If I ask you to tell me who you are, you begin by telling me the shortest story you know. You tell me your name. And then, from there, you tell me more of your stories. Our thoughts are a collection of concepts and images. They're stories. Our family histories, our memories, our futures, and our pasts. It's all stories. Your first kiss. Your first day of school. The first time you have your heart broken, the birth of your first child, the first steps that they take, the last steps that you take. These are nothing but stories. We are nothing but stories. I'm not just saying these things to be deliberately weird. I actually believe them, and not in some kind of poetic, figurative way. I believe all of this on a literal level. This is a holy thing to me. And if I were you right now, sitting there, I'd probably be wondering why this guy was telling me all this stuff. I'm telling you this because I want you to understand that I'm not kidding around when I say this to you. You are, each one of you, a writer. Don't say you're an aspiring writer. Don't call yourself a wannabe writer. Don't say, when I grow up, I want to be a writer. You already are a writer. You're writing. You're doing something special, something other people can't do. I don't say this arrogantly. This isn't some kind of superiority complex. I'm not saying you're better than anyone else. Lots of people can put words together, make sentences, communicate their thoughts. Fine. But writers are different. Writers take those things, letters and words, sentences and paragraphs, the atoms and molecules of stories, and they combine them together in such a way to produce something greater than the sum of its parts. That's what writers do. That's what you do. When you write, there's a force at work in your words, the same force that echoes through the universe, that creates a chain reaction in the minds of everyone who reads your words. Like I said, that's a very holy thing to me. It's the kind of thing that Ovid recognized was at work in his stories, a force for which he humbly gave thanks to the gods. So should we all. Now, they asked me to come here tonight to tell you about how writing opens doors for you and expands your career opportunities. All of those things are true. But that is not what I came here to tell you tonight, obviously. I came here to tell you this. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid that you're not good enough. Don't be afraid that you're too young, that you don't know what you're doing. Don't be afraid that you don't have any good ideas. Just keep writing, every day. Don't be afraid. Don't hide what you're doing. Let your parents read what you've written. Let your friends see it if they ask. Don't be afraid that people won't like what you've written. Some of them will love it. Some of them will hate it. Some of them won't even bother finishing it if they even read it at all. Don't be afraid of any of that. Just keep writing. And don't be afraid of other writers. Don't be afraid to share your work together, to trade compliments and criticisms back and forth. Start a little writers group. Get together with a few others once a week and read what you're working on. Collaborate and play together. Encourage and hold each other up. Don't be afraid. And don't be afraid to send your work out there when it's ready. Don't be afraid to send it to a magazine or a newspaper or a website. Don't be afraid to send it to an agent or a publisher. Don't be afraid of rejection. There will be rejection. Keep writing anyway. Don't be afraid. Keep writing. And don't be afraid that you won't ever be famous. Don't be afraid that you won't be on the New York Times bestseller list. Don't be afraid that you won't ever be rich. Writers don't write to be famous. They don't write to make lists or win awards. They don't write to get rich. You write. I write. We write. Because it's who we are. It's who you are. So don't be afraid. Keep writing. Now, I'm almost done, I promise. But I've got a few things to say to your parents. You can listen in if you want to. Mom and Dad, Grandma and Grandpa, aunts and uncles, first of all, let me say thank you. Thank you for being here tonight, for supporting your children. You've got something special here, and I'm glad to see so many of you here tonight. Now, if a coach took you aside and said, "You know, I've never seen a kid throw a forward pass as well as your son does." Or if they said, "Your daughter can sink 10 in a row from the top of the key." Or if they said, "Your kid is the best goalie I've ever seen at this age." Man, you'd be over the moon. You'd move heaven and earth to help your kid make the most of their talents, skills, and abilities. It's what we do as parents, after all. I've got kids, I know. You get up early on the weekends to get them to practice. You come home from work, and instead of kicking off your shoes and collapsing on the sofa, you head out to shoot baskets until it's dark. You sit in the rain and cheer them on during the away games. You sacrifice. You pay for uniforms, off-season leagues, summer camps. It's what we do. But when your kid's a writer, who knows? Most people don't know the first place to start. They might not discourage their kid, but they might not do much else. Moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas, aunts and uncles, your kids are writers. I have to say, some of them are exceptional. They're the equivalent of the star quarterback, and they need your help. You need to do everything you can for them. You need to learn about the world they're heading into. You need to help them navigate the path ahead. You have to learn everything you can about the publishing industry, about how agents and editors work, about submissions and cover letters. You need to learn about the internet and the new technologies that are emerging and how writers are using them. Your kid needs your help, as much as if they were a star athlete, even more, because the road ahead is almost unknown, unexplored by most people. They need your help. And like I told them, I'm telling you, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid if your son's walking around half the time with his head in the clouds. Don't be afraid that your daughter always has her nose in a book. Don't be afraid if your kid spends all her free time writing in a notebook. Let them. Let them read. Let them write. Let them take creative writing classes and attend workshops and writers' groups. Let them write. These are the things they need to be doing. That's their practice. And you need to encourage them to be doing it every day. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid that they're going to grow up to be an artist. Don't be afraid that they won't have any prospects. Don't be afraid that they won't get a good job. They're writers. They're learning how to communicate. They're learning how to craft concrete meaning from abstract thought, to capture people's minds and hearts and imaginations. They're learning to develop messages that persuade or educate or, yes, even sell. And they're learning discipline, endurance, self-confidence. They're learning how to begin, manage, and complete projects. They're learning how to enjoy the effort it takes to make something good, to make it better. Now, I've worked in sales, public relations, politics, corporate communications, marketing, internet development, and advertising. Every single boss I had, from the best to the worst, every single one of them absolutely valued the talents and skills I have as a writer. So don't be afraid. They'll be fine. And even more, they're learning about empathy and human life. They're learning how to communicate, how to see things from different points of view. They're learning skills that will make them better wives and husbands, things that will make them productive members of their communities. And they're going to tell your grandchildren the best bedtime stories ever. So don't be afraid. The worst case scenario is that your kid ends up with a good job that they enjoy, a life that has meaning and fulfillment. And that should be all that any parent can hope for their child. It's all I hope for. So don't be afraid. The worst that can happen is that your kid sits up at night after the house is quiet and the chores are done, after everyone's asleep, and they work on their latest story, or that poem they've been playing with, or their next novel. It's a pretty good life. Every once in a while, they might even get to go and say some strange things to high school kids and their parents and then hand out some awards. They'll be happy. Trust me, I know what I'm talking about. So don't be afraid. After that, I said thank you, and we handed out some awards. They say if you reach one person with a story or a message or a speech, then it was worth it. I honestly don't know who I reached or if I reached anyone, but it was still worth it. At any rate, that's our show. Thanks very much for listening. Don't forget, you can download a free PDF of the speech from today by going to the website, thegospelofthomasonline.com. There are plenty of other things to listen to there, stories and music and poetry and me rambling on like I did here tonight. While you're there, hit the contact button and let me know what you think. I'd love to hear from you. Coming up in our next episode, which will be here in just a few days. Inspired by the high school kids and their entries for this contest I mentioned tonight, I thought I might dig back in my files and pull out one of the oldest things I've ever written, one of the first things I've ever written. I wrote it back in high school, and I'll read it in the next episode. It's a ghost story, of course. And I guess it's kind of a love story, too. I promise I'm not going to rewrite it or polish it up. It's going to be there just the way I wrote it back when I was 16 or 17. Might be worth coming back to give it a listen. Until then, thanks very much for listening tonight. Take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you soon. This speech was originally given by T.M. Camp at the annual Right Away Awards Ceremony, which was held on April 28, 2011, in Hastings, Michigan. The version contained herein is by no means an exact transcript of that event, and most likely contains deliberate omissions or additions contrived to improve the general lucidity, relevance, and quality of the author's words beyond what he probably deserves. Nevertheless, it is copyright 2011, T.M. Camp. The Gospel of Thomas is produced and distributed by our own press. Despite this, please submit all inquiries, professional or otherwise, to the author at tmc@tmcamp.com. He's the one to blame. The music in this week's episode is courtesy of those wonderful people from Genius Car. The Gospel of Thomas is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, all other rights reserved. Visit us online at thegospelofthomasonline.com. This speech was originally given by T.M. Camp at the annual Right Away Award Ceremony, which was held on April 28, 2011, in Hastings, Michigan. The Virgin...